This is a previously recorded episode of the IT in the D Show.
This show is broadcasting live from the Podcast Detroit studios in Royal Oak, Michigan. For more information about the show or our network, please visit www.podcastdetroit.com.
This week on the episode 160 of the IT and the D Show, we got Mike Walters and Jay in the house from the Detroit cast talking about podcasting. And next segment, we have Beth.
Properties of podcasting and podcasting accessories.
It'll be demented and sad, but social.
Right. And then we also have Beth Rose here, who is the international auctioneer champion of the world.
Which probably the only person that talks faster than us.
But hey, we made it 10 times more than we predicted first started.
You got a mouse in your pocket? What do you mean we?
Than I predicted.
Okay.
And let's get the show on the road. Dave, you may fire one ready.
The following program is intended for mature audiences.
This is Max Headroom. And what you're about to witness is one of the most sinister-sounding intros to a trailer to one of the greatest epics ever.
You're listening to the IT in the D Show.
This is Billy D. Williams. Bob and Dave and I are enjoying a Colt 45 right now. And remember, IT in the D, it works every time.
Where do you guys think you are?
The Library of Congress?
Detroit? Beyond the Sun?
Any of those, right?
Hi, this is Jeremy London from Mallrats, and I'm just wondering, how did I go from Hot Floridian Sex with Brandy Spinning to the IT and D Show?
Take him to Detroit.
No! No, not Detroit! No! No, please! Anything but that! No!
I used to hang out at the Mugumbo Bar. It was a rough place, the seediest dive on the wharf, populated with every reject and cutthroat from Bombay to Calcutta. It's worse than Detroit.
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Then don't come! Shut up!
Dig, you IT geeks. This is Dre DiMatteo from Sons of Anarchy. You are listening to IT in the D.
So what happens when you tap the angry beaver in the bumhole?
Exactly. Come on.
Someone tries.
Get the hell with this. I'm calling a break. We'll come back to the show.
What's up, everybody? This is Billy Zapka. Sweep the leg. Listening to IT in the D Show. No mercy.
I may have to wipe the geek off.
Hi, this is Martin Cove, John Kreese from the Karate Kid movie. And you're listening to IT in the D.
Are we at a break yet?
Hi, I'm Ernie Hudson, and you're listening to IT in the D. All you nerds out there.
Nerds!
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 Nerds! What is a nerd?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
This is Scott Steiner, Big Pump Pump. IT in the D Show is your hookup. Holler if you hear me.
You're in your underwear, I'm in my underwear. Hey, let's hang out.
No, I'm sorry, honey. I have a headache.
I definitely want to see Bob in his underwear. That's a fact.
I can't say no, and I don't really want to.
Well, especially with the back doors open.
It's just too big.
How big?
It's way too big.
I can get it all the way in.
Really? Should we talk about this?
Tag team.
Should I keep going, or should I stop?
We just lost our clean tag on iTunes.
But it's delicious.
This is Robert Hayes, a Jet Striker to my mother. When I'm not hanging out at the Mugumbo Bar, I'm listening to the IT and the D Show. It's worse than Detroit.
Is there such thing as a meat hangover?
I love my Monday meat stick.
Hey, folks, this is WWE Hall of Famer Hacksaw Jim Duggan, and you're listening to the IT and the D Show. The tough guy.
What would you little maniacs like to do first?
The question isn't what are we going to do, the question is what aren't we going to do.
Ludicrous speed! Sir, had you better buckle up? Buckle this! Ludicrous speed! Go!
Welcome. Thank you for listening. This is the one and only IT in the D Show. We are broadcasting live here in Podcast Detroit in beautiful Royal Oak, Michigan. This is Bob the Sales Guy hanging out with Dave the Geek, Nuri the FNG. Find us online, itinthed.com. This is episode 160. We made it.
Woo!
I predicted after 16 episodes when we first started that we would run out of stuff to talk about and hate each other, and we made it to another zero.
We still hate each other.
I must announce there is a conspiracy abound. We are not in the top 50 technology shows on SoundCloud. this week.
We're nowhere to be found.
We are nowhere.
Right now. And
last week, we were 1, 3, 4, and 5. This week, we are not. I think there's a conspiracy. So we have to, like, hashtag SoundCloud conspiracy.
Been a payoff, see?
Exactly. somebody called on us or something. But we are not, and we're going to change that. But, hey, do us a favor. Give us a like on the Facebook. And thank you to shout out to Randy and Ian on the Twitters. Follow us at /IT in the D. Mark your calendars. Don't forget the Pink Slip Party is coming up September 15th. But first, on September 1st, we are going to have a resume workshop brought to you by the fine folks at Arrow Strategies, the Blackfin.
So, and for those who, like me, are like, well, September, that's got to be far away. No, that's Thursday.
Right.
FML. Summer gone.
Right. So September 1st, we're going to be from 5 o'clock to 8 o'clock at the Blackfin in the back room, just like we always do. But it's going to be a resume workshop. So just a kind of like a pre-thing for the pizza party. Warm up. See if you got what it takes, because you're going to be in front of some awesome recruiters. We got a full house of sponsors for the event, so we're going to be it's going to be a packed house. So we will see you on the September 1st at the Blackfin, and September 15th, the Pink Slip Party, the Granddaddy of them all at the Majestic. DJ Nuri will be spinning the Deep House tracks. And there'll be some DJ Nuri will not be spinning the house tracks.
He'll be off on an Asian vacation.
So, attention, we need a DJ for the Pink Slip Party. you do not want me up there playing post-bar and 80s music.
We should get Mav. Get Kyle to come down.
Done. All right, there you go. We'll give him a holler. So,
Well, then we just figured out the first two were so successful. So on October 6th, just to plan out a little bit, we'll be doing another one of our podcaster meetups over at Activate Gaming. And I'm sure we'll do the same thing we did last time. We'll have a bus that'll bring people up here and show them the studios and all that fun stuff. We had someone stop by tonight looking to start up a new show in amidst all of the Monday night chaos that happens here.
To say it lightly. Segment two, we're going to be joined by Mike Walters and Jay from the Detroit Cast. Made the transition from radio to podcasting. We're going to talk to him about all that good fun stuff. In segment three, this should be fun. We got Beth Rose is going to be calling in. She's the international auctioneer champion of the world for the women's category. And so she's going to like, give me five, give me 20. I've never talked to a real auctioneer before, so this should be a riot.
Nah, I won't make that joke yet.
Exactly. Exactly. So did you hear the news?
Hey, what news?
Gene Wilder died.
Did he?
Yeah,
today. I did not see that anywhere today at all.
Nobody posted
ever.
On your Facebook feed?
No.
Today?
I'm so sad. I'm going to miss him so much.
He's my favorite actor ever.
Today was your favorite actor?
Today.
Then tomorrow. You know.
Last week it was Kenny Baker.
Right.
Was my favorite actor ever.
Right. And Robin Williams and Prince. And
right.
Right.
Yeah. David Bowie.
David Bowie, favorite artist.
I remember all that last time I listened to his album 18 years ago.
Right.
Right.
Chicha changes, did not chicha changing. Right. Yeah.
You know, and I always have a thing about that. Like, I've never wanted, like, I always call Mike Mode from from one of the shows here. I always call him Paul Revere because if something like happens, he's always like the first. He doesn't do it anymore because I've mocked him into submission. But like, if somebody if somebody would die, or if there was like a plane crash, or if like a tornado, you'd have to announce it. Like
thoughts and prayers.
I saw it on the news. I saw it on the feeds, and I saw it on the Twitters. And yeah, Gene Wilder died. Did you hear?
Yeah.
Just came across my Twitter.
Sweater there, but it's raining outside.
Right.
Yeah. I feel obligated to start off with. We always love the having the worst week ever. Anthony Weiner.
Oh, there's two this week.
Anthony Weiner. Yeah, but Anthony Weiner is hands
down. It's not Weiner. It's Weiner.
No, it's still. I don't care how he pronounces it. It's Aswipe. So no, it's Weiner.
Did he get his phone stolen in Canada again?
Apparently he's just owning this one. As always, it goes down in the DMs. He was DMing with some chick who turns out to be a like rabid Trump supporter, who was like shooting him negligee pics, and he was posting photos of he was sending her photos of himself and his toddler laying in bed, which apparently that qualifies as babysitting now. Good for him.
Because you know I have a toddler, and you know I always take my shirt off and have my underpants with my toddler,
chubbed up boxers.
Always. Oh yeah, and
always.
You know, give it a little fluff and take a selfie. But honest, come on, Wiener. Seriously.
Like, the first time wasn't enough to keep you off Twitter for the rest of your life. You did it again.
And now his girlfriend or wife
Huma Abedin,
who is a major Clinton person, right?
Oh, she's
like
way
number
up.
Number two in the Clinton
she's
camp?
She's way up the food chain.
Rides on the private jet with Hillary?
Oh, yeah. And she's bailing on his ass.
You know, I'm just gonna come out and say, I found out like in third grade my name was Wiener. I'd just be like, Dad, when I'm 18.
At the age of 18.
I'm going to the court and I'm going to make it like Winner
Schlong.
Or Weiner. Or like, yeah.
Change my name to Dick. It's okay.
Big hairy dick. Like anything but Wiener. It's just, you know, my 9-year-old, it was on the news I was watching when we were in Cedar Point. It's like, Anthony Wiener. And you just hear her giggling. She's like, Wiener. And I'm like, say that. And you know what I mean? Like, this guy's gone his whole life
with 9-year-olds giggling at his name.
And maybe it's finally gone to his head. Maybe that's why he does it.
Oh.
No? No.
God, branding. I don't know exactly which head, Nuri. Ew. But you know, who's having a worse week than that. I feel so sorry for this guy.
Is it Gene Wilder? Because did you hear he died?
When?
Today.
Oh my God!
It just happened.
I'm so sad.
Today. Yeah, I'm gonna miss him so much.
Yeah, I know. A world of imagination. Sorry, I'll never do that again.
Bluka.
But apparently there's a show I didn't even know it existed until you sent me the link called Catfish on MTV. But like,
you've heard the term catfishing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. When you like, you know, go on match.com and the girl's hot and she shows up and she's a pig. Like, that's what that's catfishing, no?
No, that's just like, dating sites in general.
Right? It's more if I send a message to your like comptroller and say, hey, I'm the CEO. Catfishing is like really, really directed fishing using somebody else's identity.
Yeah, the Asian dude that waited at the airport 10 days for his girlfriend that never showed
what
up.
What is it when the girl's skinny on match and fat at the door? What's that called?
A dating site.
Right.
That's called a filter.
Right.
That's called Instagram filter.
So apparently this guy in a chat room met Katy Perry. And her name on the chat was Katy Perry. It wasn't like green eyes, big rack. Like singer, like, you know, it was
like you would assume it would be
right. It was Katy Perry, and this guy spent 6 years in a chat room,
thought he was dating Katy Perry.
No video chat, apparently, but no phone calls,
no,
and like got his deceased grandmother's like emerald ring and fashioned into a engagement ring, and he was going to propose. And they're like, the guys from MTV like came to his house. They were like, he thought he was getting documented of him proposing to Katy Perry. And they're like, I don't think this is real, but.
Oh.
And you can watch just the balloon, like, but how? The air getting sucked out of his.
Okay,
you know.
But honestly, like, seriously, how dumb / mentally challenged do you have to be?
Very.
To seriously think you're dating Katy Perry. Perry.
I don't know. Like
over the internet.
Even bigger than that, how do you go for 6 years?
Well, wasn't she married in the last 6 years?
She's in open relationships. She tells me this all the time.
Exactly. It's a whole polyamory thing. Yeah.
How do you go 6 years without seeing the person you're dating? How do you have like an online only relationship for 6 years?
Didn't that happen to the Notre Dame linebacker?
Monty Teo.
Yeah. Monty Teo.
The fake girlfriend thing. Well, he made up.
I take pictures of the air. I take pictures of the air sometimes.
He was telling people of a girl that didn't exist, though. So he was like, I'm going to go meet my girl. But she wasn't real. So it's kind of a different.
A couple years.
But he wasn't chatting with anybody, though.
Oh, yeah, he was.
Oh, was he?
Oh, yeah, he was.
Wasn't that the big deal? She died. Oh, yeah. Did she die?
Yeah.
And he was overcoming.
Oh, yeah.
Randy just corrected me. I'm thinking of spearfishing when you go after somebody in a very directed way. Catfishing is creating a fake online identity to trick someone into a relationship. Thanks, Randy.
Yeah.
Randy, big into spearfishing.
I wonder how much this guy sent in checks that got rerouted to Nigeria.
I don't think, I mean,
throughout.
But why would you, okay, now that would make it even dumber. Why would you send money to Katy Perry?
$100 million a year.
Yeah.
Right.
And she would be like, you're dumb enough to think you're dating Katy Perry for 6 years without ever meeting her.
True.
But like, she tours. Where did the guy live? Like Minneapolis, or was it Wisconsin or something? Like, hey,
she's in town,
right?
At some point in time,
right?
I'm on the guest list. I swear, I'm on it. I'm dating her.
Please. Oh, I gotta see. You wonder all the crap. Like, if she was there in town, but like, how did the person had to have been masterful? Because how do you like talk your way out of the guy you're supposedly dating for 6 years to not come to your concert in your hometown?
Dude, and yet again,
and she's like, she can't fly him to Vegas. She can't fly him to, you know.
If people would just spend 10% of the energy that they spend on stupid shit like this into actually doing something productive, what the person that spent 6 years on the other end of that chat room, What else could they have been doing with their life?
They could have started Grubhub that just sold for like $3.2 billion. I'm like, Grubhub was worth $3.2 billion. I freaking hate this world. I hate it in every part of my being. Like a site I get Chinese food from that would have gave it to me anyway is worth more than the Chinese food restaurant that gives me the food. Like, explain that one to me. Exactly.
It's all about the aggregator, Bob.
And you know what I think I might do, though? I might move to New Zealand. My dream has come true.
They are getting closer and closer to your dream in New Zealand, Bob.
No, it's true. It's been approved.
It's there.
So the New Zealand equivalent of the FAA has approved.
The NZAA.
That's what it is. No, that's what it is. Has approved drone delivery.
Sounds like an old file sharing app from the 90s. Nza.
That was the Metallica album on Nza.
That was Kaza.
Sorry.
They have approved drone delivery of pizza from Domino's in New Zealand.
Which, why don't we have that here? They're literally fit. Although, kudos to the Domino's guy. Kudos to the Domino's guy who it's one out of every four times when we order that they realize they can just walk across the street and deliver it to us instead of hopping in the car. We need like a zip line, a pneumatic tube system. We need something between us and Domino's. And a drone
What's
would fit
worse,
that need.
That you guys make them walk over here or, that you're
or we
lazy
don't.
To walk over there.
It's part of the service. It's
right.
Wait.
Tip them, right? I don't mind paying the $3.95 delivery charge so I don't have to get off the couch.
It's only $3.
Right.
It's even better. So New Zealand good. But also having a bad week, Pokemon Go.
Why?
Apparently they shed 15 million users over the course of the past week.
Because people ran out of Pokeballs and said, screw it. I don't feel like walking another 10 feet to that stupid whatever.
Well, I think a lot of people got into it because of the hype, right? So it's like, oh, I'm going to download Pokemon Go and see what this is all about. And then a couple weeks later, no one's doing anymore. I'm sure the same thing happened to Ingress in pretty much any online game if you don't have something to keep people engaged.
So I was at Cedar Point this weekend, and Cedar Point tried to make their own Pokemon Go, like own the park, and it's called like whatever it was called. And I go, so help me God. If I walk around and there's people looking at their phones like with their head down in the park, I'm going to lose my damn mind.
Just trip them.
Or start running into exactly. Like, oh, I'm sorry, you should watch where you're going.
Right. Well, I guess you need something to do when you're online for an hour and a half at the Valraven.
Ouch.
You know, what else
with the hundreds
do?
Of other people trying to catch the same Pokemon you are.
Right, exactly.
That are all in the
they're
same
They're not
line.
Pokemon, though. They're Cedar Pointians or whatever they're called.
Yeah. Whatever.
So it wasn't Pokemon. It's their version
of
Pokemon?
Like they wrote it from scratch.
And it's an app?
Yeah.
Wow.
Like you can download. Their app was actually pretty – I just downloaded their new app, which was pretty great. It has location, which was great. I call it the battery killer. That's the name of their app. Because like as soon as you install the thing, it's got location tracking. So I'm like, hey, it'll tell you like you're 6 minutes away from this ride. Here's the map on how to get there, walking distance. And here's the line or how long the line is.
Yeah.
So you're like, you can kind of plot out your, you know, which way you're going to go, which was awesome. But like by noon, my battery was at like 3%. So like, didn't work too well.
They charge you $20 to charge it.
No doubt. Mm-hmm. More expensive than Disney. I can't believe that place these days. $5 for a bottle of water. Then I find out that whole the company's worth $1.1 billion. I go, that explains it. But yeah, Grubhub's worth $3.2. But here you have an actual company.
Physical company right. That does stuff.
Right.
Yeah. So speaking of physical companies that do stuff, also having a bad week because as of 7:30, their website was still down. Glasshouse Brewing in Ann Arbor. Decided that it would be a great idea to go ahead and not pay their designer. And so since their designer had registered their website for them and built their website for them, and they literally said, we're never going to pay you. There's nothing you can do about it. She went ahead and took their website offline.
Good.
And replaced it with a graphic that says, this site is unavailable until they pay the agreed upon fee.
But what part of that whole equation, like, we're not going to pay you? Because I was reading that, and they're basically saying, we're not paying you. And, you know, that's the thing. Like, you go 2 days without paying your Verizon bill and your phone is off. You go 2 days without paying your AT&T and your cable is off.
Or your electric bill or your water bill. Your suppliers at a restaurant.
Site unavailable. The site is unavailable until this company pays the designer, their designer, the agreed fee. And that's glasshousebrewing.com.
Meanwhile, well, Yelp has gone into a fury over this as well.
As did Facebook, of course.
Which is kind of great. So are they actually going to ever make it now? They're a new company,
social
right?
Media warriors.
Yeah, I love it.
Pay your bills.
Yeah. Bills.
You want
they're
you know,
getting press right now. All press is good press, right?
Is it?
Well,
for not paying your bills?
Well, maybe there's a disagreement over what the agreed fee is.
Yeah.
No, it literally like it's we're just not going to pay it. Like it was what it came down to, and I
feel like there's more to this story.
I do too. I want to hear the other side.
So when it said that the designer said that they kept calling, and the person who owns the business says, "You can keep calling, but we're not paying you."
But you're so we're hearing one side of the story. A brewery hasn't come out and said anything.
They were hacked. That was it.
They were hacked. Yeah. Right.
Right.
Just like a magic stick. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hacked. Yeah. Drunk. Whatever. Take your pick.
Yes. Not a good.
You know, one of the stories that's kind of intriguing to me, and I didn't know if it was BS or not, and it's kind of more a serious tip, but like someone made a prediction like in 5 years, the Midwest is going to have more startups than Silicon Valley.
Not a huge surprise.
Yeah. You know, and one of the things that like one of the great quotes in this article was the guy basically came out and said, "You got a great story. I love what you're doing. Why don't you move to Silicon Valley?" And he goes, "Why? I got $800,000 in seed money. Where am I going to find office space for $1 a square foot? Where am I going to hire software devs for $70,000 a year? Where am I going to, you know, and what does it matter where I'm at? You're a VC and you're talking to me right now." And I think that's the only difference is the VCs still think Silicon Valley's sexy and they're not here yet.
Yeah.
But I, you know, again, it's true. You want to go – like how many vacant buildings are there in Detroit? You want cheap office space? You want to have a cool – you know, you want to buy a house like in the university district like Newry and have it like the – like a frat house and have your company in there? Like, you know, go do it. You can – pennies on the dollar compared to San Francisco. You don't have to pay people $300,000 either.
Well, the problem is that they don't. But even then, if you're paying somebody $150,000 a year, you could pay somebody half that, get two people with your seed money. It's,
yeah.
I would never actually go back to Silicon Valley. Knowing what I know, how shitty it is to live there, how much they actually pay, it's not worth it. So that's why companies like
well, yeah, you literally have to pay 4 to 5x what you would make here to make it even considerable.
McDonald's Happy Meal is like $12 alone, like for crying out loud.
I took a $20,000 pay cut and a 50% cost of living increase at least to go out there, and it was just never again, never again.
That was a good investment on your resume, right?
It was a super good investment on my resume.
But since you mentioned McDonald's, apparently they decided they were going to do a good thing, and they were going to put basically their own little branded version of the Fitbit in the Happy Meals for the kids.
Right next to the fries and the cheeseburger?
Right next to the fries and the cheeseburger. They're going to put the Fitbit in.
Eat your chicken McDog nuts and then put on your Fitbit.
Yep. As you run around from your sugar high, from your flurry or whatever the hell you have.
Right.
But they've had to recall all of them because they were causing burns on the children's that they were being put upon.
Like we're talking like bat – like.
Like
severe?
Electrical burns, yeah.
Burns, like an inch-long burn on their wrist.
I actually said there were a bunch of social media posts about graphic images of their children's rashes and burns.
Oh, yeah.
Just crazy. So 29 million units recall. That's 1 week of Happy Meal toys is 29 million.
Remember when they used to have good Happy Meal toys? I think I used to have a shoebox, and I swear to God, I think my mother threw it away. That used to have all of the –
Your
like,
wife probably sent it to Poland.
It was like the Transformer. Yeah, I know. She probably did. Like, do you remember like when they had like the Transformers and like the hotcakes and like you'd pull out the legs and the head?
Yeah.
Like they had like every piece of food they had would turn into like a Transformer. I had every one of them. I went there.
They're at every Tesco V memorabilia.
Are they really?
They absolutely
I need
are.
To buy those. Yeah. And that and half of the Empire Strikes Back glasses I broke when I was a kid.
Hardee's.
Right. No, these were Burger King ones. I got the Lando one. The rest of them I shattered, all the Hoth ones. Angry.
It's the thinnest glass ever.
Oh, it was. Thanks. It was. I'd put hot water, you know, like whatever, like water in it, shatter.
Yeah, those commemorative glasses were awesome. Remember the 84 Tigers deal?
I had all those.
Little Caesars,
I still have a Little Caesars
the Little
one.
Little Caesars ones were good, though. I had the Red Wings ones that had all the players. And I still have those.
Check and check. There was a... Peter Klima and the goalie. I'm trying to remember. You weren't here back then. That was like 86.
I had the later series with I think
no, it was Iserman Gallant was on one.
Iserman
Gallant.
Yeah. Gallant.
Yeah, exactly. It was good times.
By the way, how does that get to market, the Fitbit McDonald's thing, without somebody figuring out that it's torching kids' hands?
That shit is made in China, has bad QC,
but
nobody
cares. It sounds like it wouldn't take that many test runs to decide.
To
like,
figure out that
oh,
it's
wow, we're
burning
kids' arms.
It's the boardroom principle. It's kind of like the T-shirt that Billy was wearing in the lobby today.
Well, the mashed potato machine, 7-Eleven, yeah.
Oh, my God. Let's talk about that in a minute. But like, no, he's wearing a T-shirt. Let's put Detroit on the map with Google. And I'm like, Detroit not
but
on the
is.
Map? You know, like, what are you doing then? Like, he goes, no, we're going to put your small business on. I go, then why'd you put small business? Because Detroit's better. I'm like, not better. Did you ever hear the story about the mashed potato machine from 7-Eleven?
No.
Like, it was like, you know, like the cappuccino machine, right? And it's got like all that powder mix shit in it. And you like put your cup underneath. Well, apparently.
It's out in California.
Yeah, it's out in California. You get mashed potatoes and like fixins, like Kenny Powers, like, you know, the taters and, you know, and you get your fixins. So that you'd put the bowl underneath the cappuccino machine and out would come delicious mashed potatoes. And then you had like your fixins bar and you'd put all your stuff on it.
You just drive down the road then, like,
and just eat your mashed potatoes
with
your
bowl of sadness. Yeah. Yes,
like I was looking on,
where is this going on?
7-Eleven was test marketing it, but I looked on Alibaba, and if we buy like 10 of them, we can get them here. So we should talk about.
They're what, $3,000 a pop?
I think if you buy in mass, you don't have to, but. I want one in the studio, and then we can like sell a couple to like our friends.
And then studio, one in each studio, one in.
But then where would you get like the mix? Because it's not like the real mashed potatoes. It's like Kentucky Fried Chicken, like powder,
flakes,
water. Yeah. Right. Like that whole process, it just seems like. But it's all about the fixins.
Hey, but quick, Bob, in case you missed the memo and you hadn't heard yet, Gene Wilder died.
Oh, I'm sad.
He did.
I'm going to miss him so much.
Oh.
Favorite actor ever?
Yeah. I liked Willy Wonka. Not the Johnny Depp one, him one.
I am. This one's kind of a little bit. People are coming down on both sides of this. The University of Chicago sent a letter out to their incoming freshmen that I love them for. That said, we don't give a shit about safe spaces. We don't give a shit about trigger warnings. You're coming to college. The entire point is to have your safe zones challenged and to have your ideas challenged. And we're not here to be an echo chamber for you to retreat into with your friends. Good for them. Wow. And there are people that have a problem with this.
Don't go to UChicago then.
Don't go.
Go to Yale. Like then you can yell at the dean.
Yeah,
like Halloween costume.
Right. That was one of the worst. But like, no, good for UChicago. I hope more people take. And you'd think that UChicago of all places is like UC Berkeley. I would have thought it would have been like the way they. Oh, hippies. You know, we're going to get rid of men's hockey and put in the, you know, lesbian, transgender,
Asian
floor hockey.
Obese. You know, like,
right.
Floor hockey. Yeah.
Right. I think that, like, what was it on PCU? Like we're going to get rid of men's baseball and we're going to put in a, anyway. But like you thought you were Chicago, but I guess not. So good for them. I hope more universities take, again, that isn't that the point of college, to find yourself? Like, you haven't found yourself when you're in college. You're still learning about everything. You don't know anything about politics.
You don't know anything about
economics.
Living in a small town, not exposed to any other ideas or other different types of people, that's what happens in college.
Right. You get exposed to different cultures.
Different ideas.
And that's fun. It's cool. It's new music. Like, everything.
But
like,
it offends me so much.
Oh, you listen. Right. Like, again, social media, I think, is destroyed. It's helped and destroyed all in one fell swoop. Like, yay. And
last week was the 25th anniversary of, you know, the whole story with Tim Berners-Lee about, you know, hey, here's the World Wide Web and welcome to it. Are we better or worse for it? You know, it's got a good touch, bad touch, good touch. Everybody has a voice, bad touch. Everybody has a voice.
You know, I'm going to say because it was funny because I was talking today about, you know, hey, it's cloud now. But in 2001, we were just selling shared hosting. It's the same crap repackaged. And you know, I think the thing is they're giving the voices credence when they don't. Someone writes a blog and it goes viral, and that person's like a leading expert on X. You know, like Dave, you're a leading expert on women's roles in comic books.
Taking my daughter to a comic book story,
right?
Yeah.
Like, are you kidding me? Like, no, I'm just a dude that wrote a blog.
Yeah.
Like, no, don't. I'm not supposed to be quoted the New Yorker,
nope.
Or in the cover of Wall Street Journal,
nope.
But like, God damn it, you know, if I wasn't. And like, why is journalism? I mean, again, we're three dicks doing a podcast. It gets more listeners.
There are no journalists anymore, by and large. I mean, that's the sad reality. I mean, it's, you know, as budgets are slashed and journalism is dying, it's click monkeys that, you know, copy and paste press releases and that kind of stuff.
Or repost
as news.
Other people's content.
Yeah, there's that too.
You guys read a lot of news, so you see this a lot, but it's driving me nuts as I go through the news on a daily basis, especially on the internet, and it's a constant, oh, so-and-so said this, and now here's three people that responded on Twitter who were pissed off about it.
Right.
Like, that's the sentiment
that's
of the
authority of the, or something.
Yeah, like it's authority. It's like I don't care what Bill in with three followers in Wisconsin thinks about.
Well, they're
this
all
wire.
Pseudonyms too. Like so and so said something racist on Twitter. Oh no, like about Gabby, whatever the Olympics. So like those are all pseudonyms. Those are like backwoods. Like I don't know who they are. I'm not giving them credence. Don't give them power. Yeah. Like that, and that's the problem. It's like once you put them up on a pedestal now, then everybody thinks, well, I'm going to spew my crap.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to get reposted. And that's the problem with half of the quote unquote journalist crap these days, Dave, is someone put, like Jer posted that rebuttal to like that blog in New York about
pizza.
Our pizza sucking. Yeah. And it got picked up by like BuzzFeed and all these. He's getting phone calls and they want to repost everything and they want to talk about it. And it became like this war between New York and Detroit pizza. It's like bullshit.
Now
like,
it was two bloggers that disagreed about pizza.
But they're proud about their home pizza.
That's like, all it was.
Yeah. Right. And pizza. You made this like this like war of like, you know, it's the Jews and the Gentiles, like, you know, like, oh, they're going to battle each other and die. But hey, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back with the guys from the Detroit cast, Mike Walters and Jay. This is the IT in the D show, and we will be right back.
IT in the D. Read. Meet. Listen. Networking Detroit, one beer at a time.
Hey, this is John Schneider from Nip Tuck Smallville, the haves and the have-nots. Oh, Dr. Quinn, hot in Cleveland. Secret Life of the American Teenager and just about everything you can possibly imagine. And oh yeah, the Dukes of Hazzard. You're listening to Bob and Dave. It's the IT in the D show.
ITinTheD.com.
This is a previously recorded episode of the IT in the D show.
Welcome back. Thank you for listening to the most unranked technology podcast on SoundCloud this week. This is episode 160 of the IT in the D show, and we are broadcasting live in the main studio here in Podcast Detroit in beautiful Royal Oak, Michigan. What did Mark Pant say this was? The golden towers of a or the of one the one story, story
the
building.
One story golden tower
the one story
of,
golden yeah. tower in Royal Oak, Michigan. This is Bob the Sales Guy hanging out with Dave the Geek, Nuri the FNG. Find us online, itmedia.com. If you haven't already, mark your calendars. September 1st at the Blackfin, we're having a Pinksa Party warm-up party resume workshop with our friends at Arrow Strategies, 5 to 8, back room just like usual. And then September 15th, the granddaddy of them all, the Pinksa Party at the Majestic. And we don't have a DJ or the Ghostbusters, so we have to figure something out.
We'll figure that out.
Exactly. But, hey, we are joined by so I'll tell you a story real quick. About a couple years ago, I sent an email out, and I said, hey, you guys are podcasting, we're podcasting, we should be friends, and they ignored me. And then I sent one like another year ago. I'm like, you guys, you know, hey, hi. And then like a year goes by.
Hey, Jenny Slater. Hey, Jenny Slater. Hey, Jenny Slater.
Spam, Bob.
I got the, oh, man, I've been.
It's buried. The relevant shit gets buried. I'm sorry, man.
Jay has a rule that you have to put not a boner ad in the subject matter so that it's not an ad for a boner.
Honestly, bill. That's how listeners write in.
How so. Do they – someone must know something that if he keeps getting boner ads.
I know. Just, well,
somebody ordered something at some point.
Yeah. But, hey, we are joined
target
by –
target demographic.
We are joined by none other than Mike Walters and Jay from the Detroit cast. Welcome, gentlemen.
Yeah, thanks for having us, guys.
No problem. Appreciate
very
it. We said,
cool. It's a cool hang here.
Yeah, it's not too bad. You know,
beers, pizza, microphones.
Cool vibe with everybody coming in and out. You got
shots of white whiskey.
Going.
Yeah.
Which wasn't good, but so like.
Sorry about blowing that off, by the way. That's very unprofessional. It's just not like us at all.
I'm just being funny. Yeah. no, but we, you know, a couple weeks ago, we had the guys in from the Internet Advisor Show on WJR. They've been doing it for like 19 years. And Mike, you were on terrestrial radio for almost 20 on the Drew and Mike show.
Yep.
And you got thrust in the podcast world.
Yeah.
You know, those guys had a, you know, Foster and Gary and those guys, they had an interesting take on the whole thing. But I guess, what was your take on jumping from terrestrial into this kind of unknown podcasting world?
Well, it was always intriguing to me, the idea of getting off the radar, getting off of terrestrial. Like, ever since Janet Jackson flashed a titty at the Super Bowl.
Destroyed everything.
It destroyed everything. And if you were working in that type of radio, the type of radio that the Drew and Mike show was, it was almost instantaneous. The rules, the changes, the lawyers, the meetings that we were having. And it was driving you nuts because you're just having fun.
You have to call a lawyer and say, can I say boner today? And they're like, no.
I'm not even kidding, dude. Those meetings happen for real where we're in a conference room with a big mahogany table and you've got lawyers from New York and Washington on speakerphone and manage all these suits. And they're running down the list of what you can and can't say. And it was unbelievable. And you've got a bunch of knuckleheads sitting there, right. Mike and Mark and Trudy and
giggling.
And me, and we're all just like, oh,
can
my
we
God.
Say balls?
Yeah.
Can
no,
we
do, say you, balls? Do you remember the Angry Kid video where the little kids in the back seat? It was like a British, like little video cartoon videos, like right when the internet first started. And it was like, Daddy, can I say swear words? He's like, which ones? He's like, bugger. His dad's like, no. And he's like, running the list. He's like, bum. And the dad's like, okay. So he's like in the back seat, bum, 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 bum. You know,
it sure wasn't like a Peppa Pig episode, Bob.
It's probably. I got to watch that crap when I got kids. No, but like, how did they not? Did they laugh? You had to laugh during those meetings.
Well, you did, but it was so serious at the same time. And they weren't screwing around. And they were talking fines. They were talking firing people. And for someone like me as a producer, I'm going, okay, well, they're not going to fire Drew, so right. They might make an example out of me.
Right.
I don't want to be a part of that.
Well, you're my age, so you were, what, fresh out of college when you started, right?
Yeah, if I went to college, sure, I would be fresh out of college. But,
right.
But the timing matches up.
Yeah, right, yeah the right. Timing is right. You're right on about that. But yeah, so I'd started, you know, at 22 or something.
Sure.
And it was the most unbelievable run ever. And then it just got kind of it was still fun. And it sort of relaxed a little bit, but a lot of things had changed, and it wasn't quite the same thing. And around the time that it was announced that they were going to be that the Drew and Mike show wasn't going to continue, I had been building a studio at my house. Like, I'd rather get off the radar. I planned on doing terrestrial radio, and then on the side doing a podcast out of my house. It was this new medium that was exciting. There was no FCC to deal with. You didn't have to worry about any of that stuff. And then when that show went off the air, it was just like, wow, this is kind of a lot of fun. I think I'm just going to stick to doing this and see if we can make a go at it.
Right. I mean, the weird thing about the Drew and Mike show is people were so invested in this town. Mm. Like, you almost felt like you were friends with everyone. It was so deep. All the bits, like I was telling you, like the one website that had all the WAV files, we had all the drops that we would play it like in our office.
Yeah.
It was a huge... Like, I don't know how much you guys probably realize it, like, with your fan base, but, like, it was a huge part of a lot of people's lives.
Yeah, it was. And it was unbelievable and how loyal everybody had been in Detroit was not lost on anyone that was doing that show. I mean, we knew it. You felt it every time you went out somewhere and did a gig.
Oh, my God. We were, like, going to a concert and see Mike. You got to yell, bitch! Like, I mean, crazy. It was inevitable, right?
It was crazy. And those guys are really down to earth. So it worked. I can't remember what the question was now, but
no, just, there wasn't really a question. It was just kind of a comment, like how big of a
that angry beaver from falling down. It gets him every time.
Yeah. No, just impact that had on everybody's life.
That helped us because a lot of those listeners were like, okay, when the Drew and Mike show went off the air, it was like, well, where is everyone going to land? And Drew and I and Mark did a podcast out of my house, the Drew Cast, and then those guys went to 105.1, and I decided to stay and just do the Detroit cast. And so Mike and I did that. So Jay and I's audience, and Big E's here as well, our audience, a lot of them followed from the Drew and Mike audience.
Like, sure.
That's the base of our audience, are those listeners. And they've been loyal and amazing from day one. And they come out in droves anytime Jay and I go somewhere. It's really impressive. You know, and it's
those bits and those jokes and those drops, they don't get old. I mean, we were just talking about some of the old bits you guys were. I'm like, oh my God, it just brought back memories. Like, I would set the alarm an hour earlier just before school so I could listen. You'd laugh in bed in the morning. It was unheard of.
Dude, the amount of times I've heard from people like, oh, I was late for work because I couldn't get out of the car while this was going on. Or
see, now the biggest school, I think that's the biggest lie. Two of them that I've read and agree to the terms and conditions on this software I'm downloading. Mm-hmm. And the other one was, I was laughing so hard I had to pull my car over. That was such bullshit. Yeah.
But I believe the ones that say I was late for work.
Fair.
I was late for school, because I'd done that before I started working with them. I started listening to them, and I had a job where it was like, okay, what can my excuse be to go on deliveries for the company so I can get back in my car and drive around and listen to this madness going? Well, it was awesome.
It was, you know, I'm going to school at like at 12 Mile High at Macomb College at like 8:30 in the morning, and these guys are like fart jokes and they're hysterically belly laughing like I've never laughed in my life, and I'm like, how the hell do these guys do it? Like, it was borderline, like, not quite insanity, but, like, these guys, like, don't they sleep? Like, I feel like ass. I need to go to 7-Eleven and get, like, 4 sugars in my coffee just to, like, so I can function.
You should have heard it off the air.
Right?
Off the air was uncensored, but the same thing. It was nuts. Yeah, it was a lot of fun, though. But, you know, like we were saying earlier, the things started to change with the way the whole field was going.
Right.
So it was like the idea of doing a podcast and being able to, you know, Jay and I will say anything, like literally anything. Like it doesn't matter. We're not restrained by anything. We don't listen to anybody. And so that makes it a lot of fun, and it's really exciting. So
you guys are doing a daily show.
Yeah.
5 days a week, man.
Right. You guys are up to off. Like – we thought we were like big shots going to 160. You guys are like in the 400s.
No, 652.
You guys in the 650s? Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So, I mean – content, is it kind of like our first segment? Like, what are you pulling, just like talking about whatever's going on?
It's a free flow to some extent, but I mean, we'll start kind of with the news and see where it takes us. But that's what's fun about the show, I think, at least doing the show, is it could go anywhere.
Yeah. Some days we'll have, you know, we could have a stack of 20 stories, kind of like you guys have with your notes here. It's like, okay, we can hit these things. And then a lot like this, it can just go in a million directions. And Jay, you know, today I think we only did 7 stories. And, you know, over an hour and 45 minutes. And it was because there were so much other things going on that we went off in different tangents with. And I like that style, not being held to, this is the structure. Like when I think of morning
at Zoom. At 9:24 will be,
traffic on the 8s. Hey, everybody, traffic on the 8s. You know, and coming up at 9:31 is this. And it's like, oh, get me.
We just think about being on the show with the Internet Advisor. It's like you get into a good conversation. And it's like,
and
all
then
of a sudden,
jazz music.
The music starts.
Yeah, yeah.
Which kills your conversation. I mean, you're never going to come back to what you're talking about with the same kind of like energy and spice, you know?
Never.
Like,
no.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I like the freedom to do that.
I definitely do too. Yeah. I like the fact that there's obviously nothing scripted, there's no list that we have to get through. We just see where it goes.
Yeah. We'll have a couple sponsors. As long as we do those, anything else is just free form, whatever we want to do.
We always talked about our show as like kind of taping. If you would meet us at a bar and have a drink, like even like with shop guy, with guys from work, this is what we're going to talk about. And that was kind of our formula. And it's like, you think about that these days where it's like, how cool is it that we can tape record this for the masses? Like, again, it's kind of like it's almost narcissistic in a way. Like,
a little bit.
You want to listen to our bar conversation.
Right.
It's kind of ridiculous. But at the same token, how cool is it that, you know, we got Army bases listening to our show that we're from Detroit and got deployed and want a little taste of home that are techies?
Yeah.
You know, it kind of changed. Like, when you say, like, is it a good thing or bad thing about this whole internet? I think it's freaking amazing.
You know? Yeah, it is. It's exciting, and we get the same thing, and it blows my mind when it's like, yeah, we're in – where have we had people? Australia? Well,
the other day, a missionary from Honduras listening to us.
Right. And it's like quoting things that happen on the show, and you're like, that's unbelievable. I mean, at Riff, you had a 30,000, 50,000-watt tower, and it reached almost to Lansing.
Right.
And if you weren't in that immediate 60 miles, you didn't get the show.
Yeah.
And now it's like we have listeners in Florida, California, Arizona, all over Canada.
But you wonder, could Drew and Mike be Drew and Mike today? Because I don't think they can. They could be. It's different. It's almost like, you know, 8 o'clock when we were kids, right? 8 o'clock on Friday, you're watching A-Team in Miami Vice, right? You sat in front of that couch and you listened. And it was almost like now there's so many choices and avenues in audiobooks and podcasts and terrestrial radio and just so much stuff that it's hard to listen to that one show now.
Well, it's changed a lot of my attitude on stuff. When, you know, and I swear we didn't do this to you, blow you guys off when you sent us an email.
I was being funny. Yeah.
No, I know, but that's something like I would have thought originally starting a podcast, like, dude, anyone out there is your competition. You don't go on their show.
Yeah.
Like, that's the attitude you have in radio.
Yep.
Like, we fought over guests with CSX. Like, we got in.
Yeah, who was it? Burt Ward?
Burt Ward. Oh, we got it. There was almost a fist fight in
really?
The
Robin,
studio.
Really? Old school Robin.
Over you Burt Ward in the mid-90s. Because, you know, he had to take a whiz really quick, and CSX wanted his ass on. They wanted him, you know, first. That was the big thing. Get the guest first. You want him on your show before
anyone
else.
Didn't he have to wear 3 pairs of underpants because he had a big wiener or something?
I don't know. I didn't ask
him. I thought that was a Drew and Mike bit.
Maybe. But Bert went to the bathroom, and as soon as he walked out, we grabbed him. We're like, dude, the studio's over here. And shuffled him down while the CSX guy was in his studio like, oh, Bert's taking a whiz. I'll be back in a minute.
No, you couldn't say, hey, I'll get him at 10 and you get him at 10:30. You couldn't do that?
No. I mean, you wanted that.
Oh, the first.
First was everything.
Yeah, Bert Ward second.
Yeah. Who wants Burt Ward, sloppy seconds Burt Ward? That sounds awful. But next thing you look up, Burt's sitting in our studio talking away and just having a blast.
Talking shit about Adam West.
Yeah, beating up Adam West. And here's CSX's producer outside our window pulling his friggin' hair out. He's going nuts. He's so pissed, you know. But then afterwards, our program director, Doug Podell, at times, like, high fives around for all of us, you know, for like, yeah, that's, you get him first, goddammit.
Right.
You know?
But, like, again, with like the one thing when we have those podcaster meetups, the one thing we always encourage is guest sharing. You know what I mean? Like
cross-colony.
Yeah, exactly. And there's so many cool people with so many cool stories. There's, again, podcasting, there's what, how many a day are starting when the Libsyn stats came out? Like,
oh,
hundreds a day are launching.
Thousands and thousands a day.
Right. I mean,
let's say like one out of every two people has listened to a podcast because one out of every two people has a podcast.
Right, pretty much.
Yeah. And that's the thing you're trying to cut through. And so that's been harder for me originally, like, because I was so ingrained with that. Like, no, nah, why would you go on another podcast? Why would you go on another person's show and promote something like that?
Right.
So it's a totally different industry for sure.
Yeah, Mike and I have had several conversations over the couple of years, like, I try to reel him back off of this radio thing and go, dude, this is a new product.
Yeah.
It's a new medium. Like, let's take advantage of what it offers. A lot of it is flexibility, right?
Well, you look at Podcast Detroit. We got, what, 100 hours of programming a week?
More.
I can't listen to that. Who can? Like, you know what I mean? So you find what you like and, you know, you pick and choose and it's okay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't need to, you know, we just launched another stupid podcast and it's shocking when people say they listen. Like, people hear Dave laugh and they go, oh my God, you're Dave from, you know, I just had a job interview. It's a vice president and it's a pretty big name guy that you'd recognize. And he's like, oh my God, you started IT and the D. I listen to your podcast when I run. I'm like, you what?
Really?
Like, what?
So you give me a job now?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, no, it's like, I hope I didn't say anything stupid. You know what I mean? Like,
we weren't talking shit about you that week, were we?
No, exactly. Right. Like, but it's like when you're on the radio, you know people listen, but when you're a podcast, it's almost like you're shocked when you find out someone listens to you.
Man, I'm totally with you. I'm new to this. You know, I wasn't in radio prior, and so I'm just new to this whole idea of people listening to me, giving a shit what I say.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, not that they really do, but people listening, and I will have those moments where people will see me or stop me or whatever, and it does strike me like that. Holy shit, there really are listeners out there. You know,
right.
We're not just sitting in this room talking.
Right.
Yeah. Pretty surreal, man.
Yeah. It's an unbelievable feeling, and I get more excited for that than when it would happen with the Drew and Mike show.
Yeah.
Back in the day, because it's you know, it's something.
Well, it's your show now.
You're, Jay and I created
out
of nothing, and Big E and a couple of the engineers we've got. Like, we created it from nothing, and Jay and I really don't, you know, we're not nerds, we're not IT guys, and so, you know, we're the guys that are trained to push the button, and then this happens. The
right.
Mic comes on, and the mic.
Everyone, it didn't happen.
Everyone needs a Dave. That's what, just flat out.
Oh, I agree with that.
Everyone needs a Dave. Yeah.
it's crazy. I mean, here we are doing this podcast thing. Jay's a lawyer. I'm a producer, but neither of us have a tech background at all. And so, yeah, we're one, you know, brown out from frying the.
Oh, dude, we didn't know any of this crap. I mean, when it came to, you know, God, the one studio, let alone getting three up and running simultaneously.
Yeah, but you have a natural curiosity to figure it out. We're like,
yeah.
That's the thing. Like, he gets mad. See, it's not just me. See, he gets so mad at me when I don't want to learn stuff. I go, that's not what I do.
It's terrifying. You
do
it.
Yeah. Exactly. And then,
it's not terrifying.
No, but then.
That's it. We're worried we're going
to
break everything.
See, the problem is, you don't have it. Like, it's good to have a Dave, but it's bad to have a Dave. Because if I would ever break something up there, we'd be 70 years old. He's like, you dick, you broke the shit.
You remember the 40? Time you broke the bullet?
Oh, it'd be so true, and he knows it. And that's why I'm like, I'm not touching any of your shit. Are you nuts? Like,
see, Jay and I won't get mad at each other for stuff like that because we just expect that if we do it, we'll break it. So we don't have that contrary. But I have gained a new level of respect for the years that I worked in terrestrial radio and took for granted all the behind-the-scenes teams that made sure that a show like the Drew and Mike show went off every day. You know, but like Jay and I are putting together a show right now. It's going to be October 7th in Shelby Township. We're bringing Mike Massey to town, a musician and another guy. I don't know if you're familiar with him. YouTube him if you're not. Massey. He's
acoustic
unbelievable.
Cover guy.
He's
unreal.
Unbelievable. And so – In the radio world, if we wanted to bring a guest like that to town, you'd go to the PD and
hey, make that happen.
We want to do this, and then the PD would go to the marketing director, who would book the club and would book the sponsors, and then this department would take over and handle the promotions, and a producer would come in and produce the music, and the big voice guy would join, Mike and Jay October 7th at the Hamlin Pub.
And you get the street team handing out cards.
Team goes and peppers the bar for you, and you basically just go, yeah, we want to do this gig, and 2 months later you show up and there's a table and a shot back to the radio station and microphones and headphones and beers are set out for you, and you're just like, we just get to do
and sit now, down and do. Yeah.
Now, if all that stuff I just described upon a show like that falls on Jay or me or, Big E is peppering bars, and Jay and I are booking flights to bring someone to town, and like all of those things that I took for granted for years in radio. It's like now it's like, holy shit, you realize how important that whole system is to make something work. That makes it difficult, though.
Hey, we got to take a break. We're on a time crunch. You guys want to hang out for segment 4? This is great convo. I'd love to continue it.
Love to, yeah.
Cool. Because segment 3, we're joined by Beth Rose, the International Auctioneer Champion of the World. This should be an awesome conversation. But we're going to take a quick break. This is the IT and the D Show, and we will be right back.
IT and the D. Read. Meet. Listen. Networking Detroit. One beer at a time.
Hi, I'm Brittany Daniel from The Game, and you're listening to IT and the D Show.
ITinTheD.com.
This is a previously recorded episode of the IT in the D Show.
Hey, welcome back. This is episode 160, segment 3, the one and only IT in the D Show. We're broadcasting to you tonight live here in Podcast Detroit in the main studio in beautiful Royal Oak, Michigan. This is Bob the Sales Guy hanging out with Dave the Geek, Nuri the FNG. Find us online, ITinTheD.com. And hey, we have a special call-in guest. These are always fun. We have on the line Beth Rose. She just won the International Auctioneer Championship of the World, and based right here in Michigan. Thought it'd be a fun conversation. So we have Beth on the line. How you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you?
Good. Now, I mean, the question that everyone's dying to know is, how in the world is this, like, a family thing, or how do you get into auctioneering?
Well, I am very fortunate that I am a second-generation auctioneer. So my father was an auctioneer. And then I come from a family of 5 female auctioneers. So all of my sisters and my daughter are auctioneers as well.
That isn't – now, how does one, I guess, learn to be? Because, I mean, you watch them on TV and you're like, how in the world do you talk so fast? Are you actually saying real words, or are they just like filler?
I'm
just
humming a 5, humming a 10, humming a...
Exactly.
Actually, you're very good. I would hire you. They're actual words, and they're filler words, and they're a way to just be able to create and create this chant and this rhythm that you have when you communicate with the bidders. And it's very entertaining, and it just rolls very well off the tongue, and a good bid caller incorporates the chant, the clarity, and the filler words all together.
Now, how was that growing up in a house full of auctioneers? I mean, I can see, like, your dad getting mad at you and just,
hey,
like,
today we're going to have roast beef. Roast beef on ham. Ham sandwich on pancakes. Breakfast or dinner.
We have very strict rules at the dinner table when we go to my mom's house. Like, do not talk about auctions. Do not try to talk over each other. You all talk too fast. I don't want to hear about real estate. I don't want to hear about anything. So it does make it very interesting. You need to have a trained ear sometime to follow my sisters when we're all together.
Now, is there a science to it? Opposed to like me saying, hey, we got 25 on the board. Can I get 30? Can I get 30? And just like speaking at a slow pace. Is there a science to when like you do what you do that it entices people to buy more?
Well, it's not a science. It's more like an art. And what you do is you... it just depends on what kind of an auctioneer you are. So an auto auctioneer, they go very fast. They sell a car every 30 seconds, where maybe a benefit auctioneer or a real estate auctioneer needs to slow down a little bit because you're selling a high-end asset of someone's house.
You know, you don't have to be as fast. You've just got to be able to communicate to those buyers. And what it does is it helps build momentum, and it helps create that adrenaline that goes to the buyers, because we're all competitive in nature and people hate to lose at an auction, but it's the way you communicate to that buyer to get them to bid to you. So it really just depends on what your style. Everybody has a very different style. I have a different style than someone else, but it's what, you know, it's what my style and my bid calling art is.
There was a YouTube video that came out this week of an auctioneer with like hip hop music in the background that like flowed perfectly. It was absolutely genius how they put it together. I don't know if you ever heard it but if, yeah, oh, you saw it. Oh, obviously, you saw it.
It's viral. I mean, I have been tagged so many times on Facebook.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, it's fun. It's upbeat, but it's going viral. Had a ton of views, and that's a cattle auctioneer. So again, that has a different style than, you know, one of the other auctioneers, but it is fun to listen to.
So how does one judge? I guess obviously it's subjective, but what are the criteria for judging like a auctioneer competition?
Well, yes. I mean, there's got to be some sort of standards or something. I mean, this was an international auctioneer competition that went down. How does that happen?
This was conducted this year in Grand Rapids, Michigan, which I was very fortunate that it was in Michigan, but it's usually somewhere across the country each year. You're on a large stage in front of 1,000 of your peers, which makes it even more nerve-wracking because your peers know exactly what you're doing. And with the lights, the camera, on stage, the judges are judging you based on your poise, your clarity, your speed, your salesmanship, how you react to the crowd, how you accept the bids, how you scan the audience. And then if you're fortunate, like I was, to make the finals, you go through the bid calling again, but this time you're answering a series of 3 questions. And you have no idea what these questions are going to be, but they want to see how you act under pressure and how you communicate to the media. And once you go through that round, then you know, the judges score and, you know, then they pick the winner. But it's a very long day. It starts at 6:30 in the morning and it doesn't end until 11 o'clock at night. So it makes for a very long day, but it was the most exciting moment of my career. I can't think of anything bigger than just being there. And it's been a title that I've been wanting for many years. This was my 7th. Attempt to win, and this year was a year.
So what is that? I mean, so now you own that title. I guess what opportunities does that present to you that it wouldn't otherwise?
I have a lot of opportunities. Just, you know, as far as, you know, being able to represent the National Association of Auctioneers, I get to travel for the next year educating the public, educating auctioneers based on my experience, my knowledge, my skills on what I do in the industry. I'm very fortunate that I get to be an auctioneer for St. Jude Hospital. I get to go in November to St. Jude, and I get to have an auction for the kids of St. Jude. So I guess it's a life-changing experience. I can't wait to do it. But I get to meet auctioneers from all over the country and all over the world. And I get to, you know, help them increase their business based on the knowledge and experience that I have. And so it's the most prestigious title that you can get in my industry. There's nothing else higher than this.
So if I decide I want to take my hummina fill and I want to be an auctioneer, is there an auctioneer school? Is there?
Yeah. There's actually several auctioneer schools. I'm actually an instructor for the Ohio Auction School, which is in Columbus, Ohio, in Groveport, just outside of Columbus. But there are some great auction schools across the country. And what they do is they teach you not only how to bid call, just to be comfortable and be able to establish that chance, but they teach you every part of the business. So you get to learn about real estate, and you get to learn about auto auctions and land and commercial, industrial, art, benefit, antiques, everything that we do, so that you can, once you leave auction school, you know, you're able to go out and find your niche or your specialty that you're able to, you know, conduct your business.
So, I mean, is that when it comes to like doing an auction, like how much prep work do you have to go? I mean, is it somebody throwing note cards at you right before you walk up on stage, or like how much prep do you have to do before you like get up on stage and start calling this stuff?
Well, it's a lot of prep because I'm not only a bid caller, I'm also a business owner, which makes a huge difference. So I have a large team. So across Michigan, I'm a real estate auctioneer. That's what I'm known for. So I sell high-end luxury real estate at auctions. And I promote real estate auctions throughout the community of realtors and brokerage firms and with the public. I travel all over Michigan. I have stuff from lower Michigan all the way up to UP. Matter of fact, I've got a golf course auction that I've got coming up in Manistique. And so that's my specialty. I also give back, and I do a lot of benefit auctions, just be able to help nonprofit organizations raise money. So the prep work that goes behind what I do, because I'm putting an event on for someone who has a property that maybe that property is worth $1 million, I've got to be able to create the market. So more so than a bid caller, I'm a marketer. That's the main reason that a seller hires me, is for my marketing skills.
That's really interesting. So I know the auction industry is probably pretty large. I mean, you hear large names like Sotheby's, you hear companies like Manheim, and then you run your own. So is the industry mostly these big houses, or are these other smaller companies that people run like yourself that are actually a larger section of that market share?
Well, it just depends. I've got two sisters that work for Manheim. They're both car auctioneers. So if anybody's been down to Manheim, they're the only two female auctioneers. So they know who they are. But, you know, I do all, you know, it's not just luxury real estate that's special. I take everything, you know, so I do commercial and I do mid-range properties and I do everything. But sellers are choosing the auction. It's becoming more and more popular because we're in such a competitive market. Like, our real estate market this year has been absolutely on fire. You know, you put a property on the market, it's sold with multiple offers within 1 to 3 days.
I think you're a little familiar with that, Nuri.
Absolutely. Detroit real estate, for instance.
Detroit real estate is hot. I mean, across the country, the market has been hot. We have very low inventory, and we have extreme high demand right now. So we have more buyers than sellers in the real estate industry. So if you can take that and make that relevant towards auction, you have all buyers that you create fighting for this property, and you put them at a given point in time in the property to competitively bid. So the sellers are maximizing their value by choosing auction, and because we are in such a competitive market. We have so many buyers out there right now because we have the millennials who are smart as whips that are buying out there. They've been smart with their money, but they buy differently because they communicate differently. So you have to be able to market to them by getting to them through alerts and social media and internet, where this other big segment of the market that we have right now are the baby boomers. So right now, the baby boomers, there are 10,000 people a day turning age 65 for the next 19 years.
Wow.
That's huge. So they don't want that big, huge house anymore. They just want something simple. They want something smaller. They're downsizing, or they're retiring, or they're moving south, or, you know, whatever it is that they choose. But then the third segment of the buyers right now are the boomerang buyers. And the boomerang buyers are people who lost their houses or got into a financial crisis back in the recession in 08 and 09. Now there's been enough time that has gone by that they qualify to buy a house. So our interest rates are low. We have all of these buyers, and then the sellers, I mean, we just have lower inventory right now. So market's great.
So has the TV shows helped or hurt or been goofy, like Storage Wars? And I know my cousin is addicted to the car show, one on whatever auction. Are those helping? Like, you got people going, yep, at every one of your auctions now?
You know, we do. And Storage Wars has been highly successful. People call me all the time. They're like, do you sell storage units? I go, no, that's not my specialty, but I've sure send you to an auctioneer that specializes in them. We actually have been sought out by 5 different producers. We had a reality show. We were sought out for a reality show called War of the Rose Sisters, because what makes my family interesting is my dad started the company, and he passed away. I'm the oldest of 4 girls, and he passed away when I was 33 years old, and we had to continue with the auction business. Well, my dad set all of us up as competitors. My sisters are my biggest competitors. So I will compete against my sisters for an auction, and people just think my family dynamics is hilarious. So we had the funding and a reality show that we were sought out for called War of the Rose Sisters. They didn't really have, the network didn't really have things together. It wasn't ready at the time, but we have producers call us all the time. You know, it's the funding that's the hardest thing to get with a reality show. But, yeah. I mean, who knows? One day it might take off.
So talk to me, like, what are some of the weirdest or most unusual or most interesting things that you've been called upon to be an auctioneer for?
Oh, goodness. I did have, a long time ago, I got a call that was very controversial to me. And I received a call from someone who was the grandson of one of the 3 judges from the war crimes from the Holocaust. Wow. And so he had items from the Holocaust that were highly controversial. They were the bad thing.
Yeah.
And so morally, I didn't feel comfortable taking these to auction. They probably would have done well. However, they were all the bad things. And so I did turn that down. That was probably one of the strangest calls. I just recently did an auction in Grosse Pointe Park. And it was a house on Middlesex. And I met the seller. It was a large home, 1950s original. And he was a doctor. I said, well, what's the story behind this house? I mean, it still looks perfect, but it's 1950 decor. And he said, I have the house of the original Detroit Mafia. I said, oh, do tell. It was the enforcer's house. So the godfather lived across the street, and this went viral on the internet and with the news.
Oh, I'd buy the house just to look for tunnels.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Well, that was the thing. There was a story or an urban myth that said there was tunnels that went from the godfather's house over to the enforcer's house. And they had a front door that was super thick that didn't have a peephole. It actually had a gun hole. Oh. And so there was little secret places in this house. We had so much fun marketing this house. It was a blast. We just did that one. And so I got, you know, I sold, I just recently sold the music producer for Eminem's house. He chose an auction in order to sell his house. You know, just really some beautiful real estate. But, I've sold a place that was haunted before. And it was documented that it was haunted. It was a bed and breakfast. It was not in Michigan. That one was in Florida. You know, I've had all kinds of stories. I've had unsolved crimes, lots of things.
So
every day is different.
So for the average listener that we have out there, why do they go to you as opposed to, say, a realtor?
Sellers go to me for a few different reasons. Number one, my marketing skills. It's a level of marketing that you get that is actually the most powerful form of marketing, because it freezes the market. There is no competition with an auction. You're able to freeze and attract all the buyers that are looking, but then, of course, you also get the buyer that's not looking. It's an auction that brought them out. But more so, sellers today are a lot more sophisticated. I mean, I've been selling real estate for 30 years and auctioning, and they're a lot more sophisticated, and they're demanding a higher level of marketing, advertising, and results. But they don't want to wait. They want things to happen now. So when we, you know, take a property and put it on the market traditionally, you know, we don't know when the offer is going to come, and there's a set of contingencies that you have to get through. With an auction, everything is transparent. There are absolutely no contingencies. Nothing makes the offer go back on the negotiating.
Yeah, a sale's a sale.
Table. And, this, and the number one reason, yeah, it's just, you know, you say sold, it's sold. But the biggest reason when you go to ask a seller why they love auction is because they don't want to deal with the showings. They don't want to deal with the hassles because people are busy. They know the day the auction's going to happen. They know the day they're going to close. They know the day they have to move. So it's easier to plan their lives.
So, hey, we're running up against the end of the segment. We'd be doing ourselves a disservice if we didn't get some live some action, I don't know what how you want to do this, but we got to have you start ripping off some numbers here or something to get this thing, get the show on the road.
Absolutely. So here you go. All right, auction's on. Send me in here. I'm going to go 25. I'm going to go 75. I'm going to go 100. I'm going to go 40. I'm going to go 5. I'm going to go 75. 175. I'm going to go 2. 175. I'm going to go 2. 200. I'm going to go 2. I'm going to go 25. I'm going to go 5. I'm going to go 75. I'm going to go 300. 300 here. I'm going to go 300. Sold it. $275 right there.
Yeah. Woo! It's that word. I don't know. Like, is it like that's what I want to know. Like, in slow motion, is that like
gotta do it like the Zapruder film? You gotta examine its back right. And to the left.
Exactly.
Back.
Exactly.
And to the left.
There's definitely a talent. But hey, Beth Rose, where do we find you?
You can find me on BethRoseAuction.com or bidbethrose.com.
Okay. And I think Randy did share the link, so it's all out on Twitter if you want to check the ITND page. But hey, Beth Rose, congratulations on winning. That is an awesome achievement for you, and appreciate the time. We look forward to possibly running into you one day.
I hope so. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for the time. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, Beth Rose, the International Auctioneer Champion of the World, right out of here in beautiful Michigan. But hey, we are going to take a quick break. We'll be back segment 4 with the guys from the Detroit cast. This is the ITND show, and we'll be back in a minute.
So hey, this next segment is going to be brought to you by Lenovo. So imagine you have house guests coming over, but only one bedroom. What if you could order an extra bedroom for your guests that you could remove after they leave? That's the idea behind Lenovo's next generation data centers built for cloud computing. You see, the cloud is all about giving your company the ability to expand and contract server space on demand without actually adding more hardware. Lenovo understands that on-demand access can give your company a tremendous competitive advantage. Just think about it. The faster you can scale up, the faster your dev team can test new applications, and that means you can get new product features into market faster. But that kind of flexibility is worthless if your servers are down. Lenovo servers are number one in reliability and performance because you don't have time for downtime. Feeling handcuffed by proprietary hardware-software relationships? Lenovo systems allow you to partner with leading software providers to ensure your cloud solution is best in class. Lenovo systems can even integrate with legacy software platforms to help get your cloud solution up and running quickly. Learn more about how Lenovo is transforming the data center at www.lenovo.com/datacenter. That's www.lenovo.com/datacenter.
One of the things that, you know, we've had a couple of guests on in the past on other shows that we've done, talking a little bit about hyperconvergence, and I don't know that it's really been fully explained really well. It's, you know, it's still kind of a buzzword. It's still a mystery. It's still out there. Luckily, we've actually had the great opportunity to talk with Don Frame, who's the brand director for Lenovo North America. So Don, talk to us a little bit about, and more to the point, demystify a little bit for us, what is hyperconvergence and what does Lenovo have going on in that space?
Yeah, you know, hyperconvergence is, I guess, the newest buzzword in the IT industry, which some people don't know what it means because it is just that. It's a buzzword. It's like something that somebody made up. Honestly, what I call it is software-defined convergence. And let me explain that or give you an analogy that may help explain it.
Okay.
In the past, when I first started working in the IT industry, I had what I call the Batman belt, this big utility belt that had all kinds of things on it. I had a phone, I had a separate calendaring device, a Palm Pilot or a PDA type of thing. We had a even a pager for a while. I had a separate calculator, separate GPS.
Hey, I had my Palm Pilot Pro and my Skynet pager, or Skytel pager, yeah.
By the way, I could never get my Palm Pilot Pro to work, but I thought I needed it, right? Because
had to have it.
Yeah, you had to look like, you know, you had all your devices. But now we still have all those devices, but they've been software defined into a single device. Thank goodness we don't look silly anymore by carrying all these things on our belt. They've been software defined into a single device that we now know as the smartphone.
Very true.
We carry a single device now, and it does all of those things.
Very true. All right, well, hey, I'll tell you what. I know we've got we didn't want to take up too much of your time. So where can people find out more about Lenovo and hyperconvergence? I'm assuming the Lenovo website, perhaps?
Yeah, you can go to our Lenovo website directly. For any of our business partners out there, we have a special page, lenovopartnernetwork.com/HX. Our Lenovo Converge system is called our Lenovo HX. So go to lenovopartnernetwork.com/HX or go to lenovo.com and you can find more information.
IT in the D. Read, meet, listen. Networking Detroit, one beer at a time.
Hey guys, it's Timog, Bruce Leroy from The Last Dragon. You're listening to the IT in D show.
ITinTheD.com.
This is a previously recorded episode of the IT in the D show.
Welcome back, segment four. This is episode 160 of the one and only IT in the D show. We're sitting here in Studio One in
vaguely paying attention to the songs as they click
in
down.
Beautiful, yeah. Podcast Detroit in sunny Royal Oak, Michigan. This is Bob the Sales Guy hanging out with Dave the Geek, Captain Soundboard for tonight. Nuri the FNG is in the house. Find us online, itinthed.com. And hey, appreciate the guys from the Detroit cast hanging out with us and all the way through this show. Thought you were going to bail, but you didn't.
Yeah, no, you've kept us up Thanks past our us. Bedtime. We're glad to be here.
What time do you get up? What time do you do the show in the morning?
It depends. I mean, we don't have a boss, technically, so whenever we want. But we typically get up pretty early.
See, with us now, we
I mean, not that we're together.
Separately. We wake up separately.
Right. This is my partner. Business.
business.
Yeah, yeah. No, but like the way Dave and I, like when we started down at the Russell at an internet radio station, like we knew if we had to be Monday live at 9 o'clock. Otherwise, we're like, tummy hurts. I don't feel good. I don't want to do the show tonight.
Yeah.
Dancing with the Stars is the final. I don't want to, you know. But, like, no, 9 o'clock, it's bowling night. You know what I mean? If you're not there for the first frame, your team loses 10 pins, and then you're an asshole.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, but that was how we could do it. But, yeah, I mean,
we put some structure to it pretty early on once we all three of us linked up because we just felt like it was too – all over the place, and listeners were just kind of like, hey, I wonder if they're going to do something this week.
You know? Right.
Yeah. So we quickly went to that 5 day a week. Maybe bit off a little more than we could chew. I don't know.
So how did you two hook up initially?
Because I'm not going to lie. We've talked about like trying to roll some like a different show daily.
Mm-hmm.
No.
I get hats off. I have no idea how you guys do
it's
that commitment.
All of our main job, you know, as Mike mentioned earlier, I am a lawyer, unfortunately. I really don't like doing that work, but I do a little bit still, and I do some other stuff. But this is our main gig, you know?
Yeah.
And so we just look at it as that, and we work hard every day to put out the best show we can.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, again, going back, how did you guys end up hooking up
and
doing
this? Yeah, so we've known each other since, what, we were 15 or 16.
Yeah,
Happened to go to high school. Yeah, happened to go to high school together.
Harrison High School, go Hawks.
Yeah, for one
Drew
more
Stanton.
Year.
There you go, Drew Stanton, yeah.
For one more year before they close it down.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, so we kind of split. I mean, not that we fell out of touch, but we went on different paths. I've got three kids. I've been married 18 years.
Mike's the consummate
bachelor. And he did his thing, as you talked about before. I went,
come on, man, we're going to Vegas. Like, dude, I got family.
Yeah,
I got kids.
Right. I'm that guy, right? I got to study. So I did the law school thing and then was a lawyer for a long time and hated it and kind of just quit off the cuff, which wasn't like me. I mean, I'm not a fly-by-the-seat-of-my-pants sort of guy when it comes to, you know, my family's security and all that. So I had gone a long time.
Your wife said, you did what?
No, you know what? It got to the point where, and I'm convinced I'm not alone in this as a lawyer. I'm 43 years old. I'm convinced everybody my age and younger, probably 85% of lawyers would get out if they had a viable option.
Right.
Honestly, yeah. It's a brutal course of business.
I'm shocked at how many lawyers I meet that are like, oh my God, I'd do anything. To not be a lawyer.
Well, I'm
anymore.
Proof of that.
One of my good friends actually just dropped out of being a lawyer, and he now makes furniture.
Yeah, exactly.
He's like, I'm sick of this shit. I want to do something with my hands, and he makes beautiful furniture instead. Yeah,
obligatory, Bob could never be a lawyer because he's never passed a bar in his life. So.
No, so I off the cuff kind of just had enough in early 2014, quit, and then – by chance, Mike comes back into my life at that moment, like 4 days after I quit, and was like, hey, man, you ever think about doing a podcast? I'm like, what's a podcast, basically? Yeah.
And talking to Mike and say stuff. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was funny because I didn't know what I was going to do. I knew I wasn't going to 105.1 with Drew and Mark.
Right.
And I didn't want to dive back into radio, and I wanted to do a podcast. And I was like, I got to find somebody that I can hang with, that I can do a show with, that I think is funny, that I think could be good at this. It wasn't like, oh, I've got to find someone with a broadcasting background. It's just got to be someone that could get in a room and hang and roll with shit. Like, that was really, really important to me. It wasn't, oh, I need to find a stand-up comic.
Well, you got the broadcasting background. You're the bottleneck. I mean, I was...
Yeah, sort of. And Jay's name kept popping into my head, and it didn't make sense because it was like, he's married with kids, and he's a lawyer. And I just out of the
blue. He's going to sit there and tell me what I can and can't say.
I knew he wouldn't do that, but I knew he'd be good. I honestly knew that he'd be really good at it. And so I don't even know why I called you. I didn't know you'd quit the firm. I don't even remember what the point of the call was, but it was like, dude, I think you'd be really good at this. And he came over that week, and the rest is kind of history. We just started doing it.
I mean, we have somewhat of a chemistry, having known each other for so long. So that was.
Yeah,
not something we had to build, which was good. But
and we had crazy stories from our childhoods were kind of we were running pretty wild when we were young. So we had a lot of like.
Thankfully, in the days before Facebook, Twitter, social media, none of us are in jail. Yeah,
yeah. But as far as like being like the 16-year-old drunk kids running around being assholes, that was us. And so we had a lot of that, those stories, and a lot of that stuff comes up in conversation. It's like, I can't believe we did that. I can't believe we got away with that. I can't believe we survived that. And so like Jay says, the chemistry was kind of built in, and we've just gone from there.
Well, we find the same thing out with our show when people. Like, the conversation we have, like, I feel like I want to talk back to your show, or I feel like I'm part of your little group.
We've had people tell us they talk back to our show.
They're right.
I think you're doing it right then. I mean, because that's what we've aimed to do, kind of make it that feel, like you mentioned before, kind of like guys sitting in a bar and talking, and that's how it comes off. And I think it's the same thing. People will tell us that, like, you just sound like a couple buddies sitting down there, and then Big E jumps in and we hammer him and we go from there. It's just,
why hasn't Big E's like sitting back in the corner? He's not even
on
getting close to a mic.
Orders, not to
the
mic's live. You can move forward.
I know. I'm kind of just came to watch and stuff. They can do their thing.
Or
I don't
whatever.
Need to, I do have a constant need for attention. But I try to back off once in a while.
You just came here for the kegerator of falling down.
That's right. That's the only reason. Right. I'm actually just a radio nerd, and I just like seeing the idea. I liked the idea of just seeing another studio and stuff like that more than anything. So,
Big E's a big part of our show, though. You know, it's the Detroit cast with Jay and Mike, but. Biggie adds a lot of flavor, and he's fun. So.
Yeah, he's great because he rolls with whatever we do. I won't make him show you his toenails, but there's things.
Thank
like,
you.
Yeah, we'll, our listeners will understand that. But you know, we at one point, and Drew and Mike listeners will remember the San Francisco Jacks.
Oh yeah.
The legendary voice of the San Francisco Jacks, Jerry. Hello. Welcome to the information. And it's this.
Dave doesn't know what that is, do you?
No. neither do I.
The San Francisco Jacks. Google it. It's
J A C K S or J A X?
Like the like, yeah. And they're a group of like-minded men who get together in a room and jack off with each other. And
okay.
So, they've been doing this for 30 years.
And they had a hotline.
They had a hotline, and this guy that does this message, his voice is ridiculous. Oh, this is Jerry from the San Francisco. Like, and so we call this thing, and
I thought this was like a minor league sports team.
It sort of is. It's sort of getting the workout in. And so we actually, Jay and I were like, let's send E to San Francisco and make him attend one of their meetings. And so we flew Eric out.
The son of a bitch went.
And he went, and they've got a whole list of rules. I'm telling you, do yourself a favor. Listen to their hotline message because they've got a list of rules. Poppers are out. Mandatory clothes check. So if you're going to go into their meeting, you have to be nude. And so
creative pecker play is encouraged.
Yeah. So Eric went into
tying the knot, or what's creative pecker play?
And stripped down
the Loch Ness Monster, the
Kentucky wristwatch, whatever.
Slap bracelet.
So he actually went in there, got nude, and hung out in a room full of guys that were jacking off with each other.
Well,
and that's something Jay would never do, I would never do, but he's
really
gamer.
The only reason, and honestly, my connection to Drew and Mike would be I was a longtime listener as well as Mike was, and I ended up luckily enough getting to do an internship with Drew and Mike, and that's kind of how I met Mike through this whole thing. But like, I just always wanted to do radio, and the main reason was I didn't want to grow up, and I felt like if I could somehow get a job where I could travel and get paid to do really immature bits, that would be like, what else would there be? So like, that was a dream come true to me, not seeing men jerk
to go
off
to
in
San
a
Francisco.
Room.
His whole thing was, do I get to go on a plane and do I get to stay in a hotel?
Yeah, this is a very pan-like existence.
I told them that. I said, I will do anything. If I can fly somewhere and stay in a hotel, I will do anything. I don't care. I don't know what it is, but I just like that.
So, guys, I'll be in Singapore next week. just FYI, if you're going to do something weird on the radio, I will totally call.
That's right. Make sure you have the call-in number with you.
See, it was all about those hot with the Singapore checks.
It was all about the hotline. I'll never forget there was a bar called The Marquis, formerly Todd's, and the guy had this voice, he's like a Romanian guy. He's like, hello, thank you for calling The Marquis. And he would run down the bands that were playing. And like, we always called when he's like, this week, Blood Sausage will be. And then I found out the guys that were Bumping Uglies, or their first band name was Blood Sausage. And I lost it, because that was, to us, that was our San Francisco Jacks. We'd call it hotline. I swear to God, three times a week. Like, thank you for calling The Marquee, formerly Todd's. Like, I swear to God, there's people probably that look back in the day. This is like old City Club days. Like, oh my God, I totally remember that.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, those are the best.
They're awesome. And Eric actually got to meet the guy that does the voice for that commercial, Jerry. And hung out. And Jerry, I called Jerry afterwards, and I was like, how did my boy do? And he went, strange fellow. A guy that jacks off with a room full of dudes for a living.
Right.
Thought is a strange fellow.
You know what? Okay. In my defense, I feel like I get hammered on that. In my defense, I was nervous and it was awkward to me. I mean, I was
the only one not jacking off.
How could it not be awkward?
They have an event. I had to pull it. They have a bi-weekly event called,
it's second.
Called the Olympics.
Yes. I'm on the website as well.
I just totally ruined my.
Needs work. Don't be offended
by
the website.
Dr. Jiswell.
Yes.
They're always very theme-based. They try to be.
Yeah. It was awkward, though. So, like, of course, like, I feel like it's unfair for him to call me weird when I'm the one going into a room.
It's
of
all relative.
60 men getting naked and jerking off. Like,
when did Romy? Come on.
When did that ever become a thing? Like, you know, just like at home. Just
sort of
good,
like, why? Like porn sites that have share to Facebook buttons. Like at what point in time are you on a porn site? You're like, you know, grandma would really love, or like, you know, my sister would really, really enjoy this.
Yeah.
Bob, you should check this out. Share to Facebook. Go.
No.
No, thank you.
You know what I miss more than anything is when anytime we were in the playoffs, when they would cook the donut shop terrorism And do you know that, Dave, at all? So, like, whoever the goalie was, like, for example, the famous one was, like, when we played, like, Chicago, Ed Belfour, and they would call donut shops. And they would go, hey, there's a guy sitting
in Chicago.
Call it in Chicago. And they say, hey, there's a guy sitting in your donut shop. I need to speak to him. Can you please page Belfour Blows? And the guy would be like, and it was always foreigners, like, who? Like, Belfour Blows. And the guy was like, hey, Belfour Blows. Like, you know? And then they'd ring the
dance
bell
of
every.
Ball?
You know, yeah, exact ball? Dance of all. Right.
Darts at those.
So the transition from all that mayhem to, you know, what you've got going now with Detroit Cast. Like, so what's. For those who don't listen, like, so what is Detroit Cast? I mean, obviously it's a daily show. What do you guys do? What do you talk about? What's next? I mean, like, what are you guys trying to branch into, if anything?
Yeah, it's a 5-day entertainment based show. You know, we usually hit the daily news, whatever's happening in the world. But a lot of times, I mean, I think listeners have learned our personalities, learned to a large extent our personal lives. Mm-hmm. And so much of the show some days is devoted to what we're doing and you know, where yeah. things are going personally, which is strange.
And there's a good, for me. There's a good, it's very strange for Jay, the idea of people listening to like fly on the wall type atmosphere.
Right.
Listening. But I think what works with our show is the fact that I'm more of a bachelor guy, no kids. He's married with kids, and this guy's just a retard. So
don't take that word from us, by the way. Don't take that.
No. Can't have the R word.
No. This is not a safe space. Okay. There's no trigger warnings.
You're a retard. Yeah.
And the three of us shouldn't be in a bar together hanging out. Like, just our lives, you know, as you get older, they go their ways.
Right.
And this wouldn't be the typical, like, group running around.
Yeah, it's an interesting Venn diagram that leads to this show. Yeah.
Yes. And so we all find common ground in comedy, and that comes to the show, but our personalities come through, and we all have kind of different takes on things.
But if someone ends up banging a horse somewhere in Missouri, we'll all laugh about that, yeah. You know? Like, that's universally funny.
Well, why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Exactly.
I was just going to say the one thing personally for me listening to radio or shows that I like about this show is if you're a listener, I think sometimes there's a lot of fake. You get those morning shows where it's like, or Mitch Albom.
Bill McAllister.
Right. They have to laugh, the co-host and them. And Jay
might as well be a laugh track.
Get in fights sometimes on this show.
I actually pummeled him one day.
Right, he punched me on the show one time. But the point is, I think what's cool about
he turtled.
It was
very Lemieux-ish.
It was very Lemieux-ish.
But I think that's cool. Like I think so many shows you listen to a lot of times, it's like I said, it's so much fake, and sometimes we get mad at each other. But in our format, and because it's not a real terrestrial radio situation, that's okay. But when the show's done, you know, it's like not walking on eggshells. It's just it's done, and whatever. But I think that's really unique to this show, personally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the non-PC aspect of it is very important to us. You know, you guys mentioned the safe space story earlier. I mean, we would talk about the same thing probably in a pretty similar manner. That shit drives us nuts, in particular Mike. I mean, he could talk about it for 3 hours every day, how the PC media drives him nuts and where all that's going. Mm-hmm. So it's very much it's real conversation that I think most people are having. You know, it's not what's being put out on terrestrial radio or what you'll hear from the talking heads on CNN and Fox, but it's what you and your buddy would talk about in the way that – with the terms and
– that you would talk about
bingo,
it.
Yeah. We don't hold anything back at all, ever. And sometimes you fall on your face for that.
And we don't edit it either.
And, we don't edit anything.
Neither do we.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we've had that. We've had that. Should we be talking about this moment?
You should. Definitely.
Yeah, they're fun. They're real. Because the fact is, if the microphones weren't there, they're the conversations you'd still be having with your buddies.
Yep.
You know, it's when you throw on headphones and talk into a microphone that everybody in the media in general gets this back off, kind of hands off attitude that we're just like, yeah, screw it, man. Just go for it. Go for it.
So maybe Ryan Lochte just embellished a little bit.
Right. So you guys have done, you said 650 shows, is that right?
651 or 652. That's,
do you guys ever find a time where you have nothing to talk about?
No.
How does that like
happen? I worry about that every day. Honest to God, before
it's like
we
keeps
turn
them up at night, but no, dude, no way. I mean, no.
It does. It doesn't bother
me. Always laugh.
These two come in.
What's he worried about?
And they're like, what are you worried about? Dude, I'm telling you. Ever since I started hosting a show, it never happened to me when I was producing a show or co-hosting on a show.
Right.
But as a host, it worries me every night I go to bed. Like, okay, where is this going to go? What are we going to do? And until we turn on the mics, and then it's like, and then it's just off and running. And you'd think I'd learned my lesson, but I never do. And so every day, every morning, I still get nervous about it. I don't know why.
I'm right there with you. I mean, every single one of our events, especially the bigger ones, like the one in September at the Majestic. I freak out for like 4 days leading up to them. Like I'm just a shitty basket case of nerves about it. And then
no one's gonna show up.
Until 5 o'clock, and then oh my god, 5:01. Shit, there's nobody here. There's like 8 people here. And then like at 5:28, there's like 400 people there, and I'm like,
yeah.
And it happens every time. And you would think by now we're 20 something into them now.
Right.
I would learn, but no. The freak out's just a part of my process.
It's part of my process too, and I hate it. Honestly, it doesn't make it any easier.
Nope.
I hope that goes away at some point. I have a feeling it won't. But that's the reality of it. But
where does that kind of make you do better, right? So that means you care about it and you're going to do better for it, I think.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. I wish it wasn't that way. Believe me, I'd give anything to be like Jay, where it's like, dude, well, whatever.
His attitude
is kind of like, okay, what's the worst that happens? We fall on our face today? Okay. Yeah, whatever. The sun's still going to rise in the east.
So we don't listen to episode 652 ever again in our lives. We move on.
And we've had
the episodes where we come on the next one and go, oh, we got to apologize for this. That's brutal.
Yeah. We're sorry for that. It's usually, you know, we're going to be our hardest critics no matter what.
We just don't listen to our episode one. I think everything else is fair
first
game.
First 10.
Yeah, one was especially bad. I was friends with Larry Henry from WWJ, you know, news and weather at the twos. Mm-hmm. And I decided, you know, since we couldn't get Larry to do, because I'm like, hey, can you do our intro? And he wasn't available. So I decided to like be like, hey, welcome to the IT. And I'm like, oh, no, I just did it. Like, oh, no.
Yeah, he was like, somewhere between like cheesy bar DJ and strip club
and
DJ.
And I DJed at the Post. Yeah. I DJed at the Post for like 13 years. So I was eating the mic going, happy birthday, Jennifer. You know, it was just bad. It was, you know, sorry. Edit that, Dave. I'm just, no. Yeah, but, you know, like, I didn't know.
Somewhere there's a Jennifer that it's her birthday and she'll be happy. Right.
All of us here at the Post Bar, like to wish Jennifer a very happy birthday. Shots of Jägermeister, $3. You know,
we've all had those moments. Unfortunately, yours are recorded on an MP3, whereas Mike's aren't. We've been trying to get him to dig up his early years.
Yeah.
Because he's always pointing, oh, gee, you know, he started, and we're going to look back and
it's all there.
Hit number whatever and listen.
I have shows that I would be mortified if anybody in the room listened. Like, I interned for Drew and Mike in, like, 95, and then in 96 I hosted a show in Lansing and then hosted another one in Kalamazoo. And
would you go by the Beagle?
No, it was Mike and the Beagle, Dave Gross.
I thought you were
still
the Beagle.
In Lansing.
I thought you were the Beagle.
I wasn't the Beagle. I would not have a cartoony name like that. I wouldn't do that. But no, but I'd be – I can't even tell you, like, how bad that radio was. And I remember, you know, I mean, this was pre-internet you know, you couldn't do research like you can today. And I remember one.
Well, but the flip side, you didn't have to deal with message boards telling you how much you suck every day.
That's true. I'll tell you, my very first break on the air ever, the very first break I ever did, it was like 4 a.m. leading into the morning show. And I finally got there. I was like, okay, I got to crack the mic. And I do my break. I go into a song and, oh, I'm taking requests. If anyone's got a song they want to hear, call me up on the Edge hotline or wherever, you know, 92.1 The Edge, I think it was, in Lansing. And phone rings. I'm like, oh, first caller. I got the thing recording, you know, the big track recording, and I hit it, and I'm like, yeah, what's your request? He's like, yeah, I got a request. And I'm like, yeah, what is it? He's like, find a new career. You suck. It was the very first call I ever took in radio. I was like, God damn.
Man. You're kicking the nuts. Welcome to radio.
Yeah. So I did have that, but I had Weird Al Yankovic on, you know, and my partner was he was just a drunk bar rat, and he called in sick one morning, the morning where we had Weird Al Yankovic on, and I'm like, I got no prep material, I didn't book this interview, and I'd kill myself before I'd let you guys listen to that interview. I mean, it was just like, yeah, how's it going, Al?
Remember when you did Eat It? That was cool.
That was great.
Cool. That was awesome, man. And I'm like, so where are you playing? He's like, you don't know where I'm playing? I'm like, yeah, not really. I'm sorry.
I got nothing, man.
It was like a 3-minute interview. It's horrifying.
So you're lucky that's off in the ether, man.
It is. It's gone.
You got to talk to Weird Al, though. I'd give anything to talk to Weird Al right now.
Sort of. And he was kind of like, dude, you don't even know what you're doing. And I'm like, yeah, I know. I suck. I'm sorry. I wasn't prepared. But I did talk to him for a couple minutes.
I missed him at Freedom Hill this past Saturday. I'm sad.
Yeah.
I see him at the Fox,
amazing.
Though. No, he's great. Well, the thing with his shows is it's unlike – like I saw him at the Ritz when the Ritz was the bowling alley in Roosevelt, not the Ritz on 10 and Hoover.
Yeah.
And those shows were great. You know, it's funny because he gets up on stage. He goes, playing a concert in a refurbished bowling alley. Look at me, Ma, top of the world. 1, 2, 3, 4. He hits the accordion. I'm like, this guy's a freaking genius. Yeah, like, it's the best thing I've ever seen.
Dude, but his last album was incredible.
Yeah.
With what was the song?
Tacky. Because
word
I'm techie.
Word Crimes.
Oh,
I thought Word Crimes was bad.
But like the way he does his concert, he dresses, he changes for – so what he'll do is every song – like in between each song, there'll be like a 4 minute break where he plays like a clip from UHF or he produced something.
Yeah.
And he comes out in like a different outfit and like he like reenacts that song. It's seriously, you want, you know, top value dollar for your entertainment dollar. He's like one of the best.
There was a recent music video he did where he was in a house and there was a bunch of outfit changes and he was running through the house, all done as one take.
What?
Really? Yeah, seriously, I don't know what the song was, but it's out on YouTube.
I love how he started, though. Do you ever like how he started? Like his like Dr. Demento was a thing, and he went and recorded in his dorm room's bathroom with like the James Bermuda shorts. I'm a huge fan. Like I've been collecting his records since birth.
Yeah.
Played like the drums on the accordion case. Another One Rides a Bus, and he like they recorded it in the dorm and sent it to Dr. Demento, and Dr. Demento was like just loved it. Salivating.
Tacky, by the way.
Tacky?
Yeah.
That's the name of the video?
No, I've seen that. You're right. I've seen that video.
It's a spoof of Happy.
It's a really good video.
Yeah, okay.
I think he had to record it like 22 times or something that day just to try to get it all in the one cut. But that's one
that's
cut.
That's impressive. I haven't seen that yet.
But apparently he's coming out with a new cartoon on like Disney. I can't wait.
Really?
Because like he had like a Pee Wee Herman style show like back in the day, like Saturday morning cartoons, which was unbelievable. Anything he took. But the thing I missed more than anything was not to get too much into Weird Al, but like when he did Al TV on MTV, when he did those fake interviews with like Ozzy Osbourne and like they were you know what I'm talking about?
I remember Al TV. I don't specifically remember bits.
So I had everyone VCR
he
recorded.
He didn't do the prep, Bob. Remember?
Three minutes ago. Yeah. So what he would do is like, let's say Ozzy Osbourne.
Him. He doesn't know it.
You're making him relive his worst nightmare, Bob.
So your homework is to go on YouTube and go LTV interviews. But like let's say he interviewed – like Ozzy did an interview with somebody else, let's say. And the background was like black with like – you know, so Al would like do a fake interview and he would like – so say something stupid. And Ozzy would lippy lippy and pipey sinky. Or you know, you would tell him you know, like, what the hell is a hammy sink? You know, like – and they would go back and forth and they were absolutely – go on YouTube on the ride home and just watch them. They're a riot.
Oh, that's good.
Go on while you're driving. Yeah. Sure. Why
not? As the passenger, right? As the passenger. Right.
Sounds good.
But hey, Mike, Jay, show's coming to an end. We appreciate you guys hanging out.
Yeah.
Find you at DetroitCast.com.
Yep.
All your socials, DetroitCast, Facebooks and the Twitters and the Instagrams.
Follow us on Twitter, too, at Walters Radio with WOLTERS, at Biggie DetroitCast, at J DetroitCast, at DetroitCast as well. So, yeah, we're out there. Thank you guys so much for the time. That was great.
Love having you guys in.
Yeah, I hope you had fun. Awesome. We had fun. You guys are awesome. Appreciate you hanging out. But, hey, this is going to end.
We'll have you guys on our show, too.
Yeah, I'll wait for that email.
Yeah, it's coming. God damn
it. This has been episode 160 of the IT and the D Show. Do us a favor. Drink up your drinks. Get your phone numbers. You don't got to go home. You just got to get the hell out of here. On behalf of Bob and David Nuri, thank you for spending time with us. We appreciate it. Thank you to Lenovo for sponsoring the show. And thank you to our guests, Mike and Jay from the DetroitCast and Beth from the Auctioneer.
Beth Rose, yeah.
From Beth Rose from the Auctioneer champ of the world. This has been episode 160. Please drive careful. Beat it.
Emergency destruct system is now activated.
Conan, what is best in life? To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to hear the lamentation of their women.
Long live Flash! You've saved your life. Have a nice day.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Nice shooting, son. What's your name?
Murphy.
The run.
Game over, man. Game over.
It's over, Johnny. It's over.
Nothing is over. Nothing. You just don't turn it off.
I can't say no, and I don't really want to, so.
Well, especially with the back doors open.
Yo, hold up. Time out. Time out. Y'all take a chill. You need to cool that shit out. And that's the double truth, Ruth.
Bob loves it in the camp.
I hope this was as much fun for you as it was for me.
That's why I like it in the can.
Joe, own the cheese. Owns. 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 Owns.
Fear me.
My job is to make sure this program is morally upright and cultural and wholesome.
Shut up, Mimsy! Shut up, Mimsy! Shut up, Mimsy!
Why would, like, B
Buick put their cars next to, like, the Bentleys? Like, why? That's not marketing.
The alphabet.
It's brilliant.
Yeah, I can't take that position.
That analogy sucks because it's right.
Because you're getting your 8-track tuned up.
Are we at a break yet? Yeah, so now I'm just, like, doing, like, stupid stuff to make me laugh.
Venture capital is not the end game.
When are we going to talk about me?
Jane, you ignorant slut.
It's my show. I can say what I want. Yeah.
Kiss my ass, go home, unplug, get off the goddamn internet. You are everything that is wrong with the internet right now.
You're so white right now.
I'm the whitest guy in the room. Just explain it to me.
Show now!
I love this city.
I was banging on the wang.
Really? Should we talk about this? Tag team. Should I keep going or should I stop?
Can I just say, it's been great being on a show that talks about Mickey Rooney dying for 20 seconds and then poop for 10 minutes.
This is a previously recorded episode of the IT and the D Show.